The idea we control our lives on our own, with no assistance, guidance, or even interference, is often suggested as a level of success. Pulling oneself up by the bootstraps has become a mark of grit, integrity, and ingenuity. Likewise, the reliance on help, especially from government institutions, can be derided by some as failure or worse. Lua Camille Yule says we need to get past what she calls the myth of autonomy and accept that we all have assistance, guidance, and government involvement in our lives. She studies autonomy-related legal issues and is an associate professor of law at the University of Kansas. Recently, she delivered an address about the myth of autonomy on the University of Arkansas campus, and while in Northwest Arkansas, also came to our studio. I asked her if there was just one myth regarding autonomy.
Oh, gosh, that's such a good question. I think the system or the value of autonomy is a network of myths. And so autonomy and that idea comes through in a lot of ways in sort of the human condition and our experience and our institutions. And so there's lots of myths of autonomy, though I hadn't thought about that until you said that right now.
Well, you title it The Myth.
Right.
So is there an overarching myth then? Or?
Well, yeah, because the idea of autonomy tells us that we want to be independent. It tells us that we should be independent, that the normative ideal person is an independent person who makes their own decisions and governs their own lives without influence from others. And if you aren't able to do that, you're problematic.
That's a very American sort of attitude, isn't
absolutely, it? Absolutely. Completely, you know, no more apple pie-y American story can you come up with? And that's not really true. We're always dependent on others. And that's good. And we want to be dependent. And so we can fool ourselves and we can create narratives about autonomy and we can demand that the law help us be autonomous. But we don't really want to do that. You know, if we were autonomous, we would say there's no inheritance. You can't give money to your children, because if they were autonomous, they would figure out how to make their money on their own. We don't want that. We want the law, in fact, to facilitate that. Like, what is the claims out there of people who have money to give to their kids? Get rid of inheritance taxes. It's not fair. So we're not asking the law and we're not asking society to help us be autonomous. We're asking society to help us bolster up the way we really live. And the way we really live is as interdependent and dependent on others throughout our lives.
You know, to hear you say that in the last 40 seconds or so makes all kinds of sense. But I imagine that a lot of people will bristle when they hear that.
Well, because autonomy is sexy. Who doesn't want to be autonomous? Who wants to think that, you know, I wake up in the morning and without all of these systems bolstering and keeping me supported, I couldn't go throughout my day? No one wants to think that. We've been taught since we were born, at least in America, we've been taught since we were born that that makes you weak and that makes you, you know, a problem and you got to fix that. So I think a lot of people would bristle, and you should. That just means you were educated in America.
Okay. Stepping aside from the legal realm for just a moment, I get in my car and I stop at a stop sign. I wait for the red light to turn green. I mean, I guess if I was autonomous, I'd just be you're looking left and right and going, right?
Exactly, right? You are not making that decision, you know, completely free of the influence of others. And we create those rules because we say, well, we're all living in this space and we need to sort of understand how to keep each other safe. And in fact, it's so funny that you use this stop sign example. My sister gets so mad at people who run red lights or people who don't stop at stop signs.
Well, because they could kill you.
And it's very powerful. The law has educated us really powerfully to understand that all these ways that we're not independent, we're not autonomous, are good. And we're supposed to abide by these dependencies.
Okay, so let's go into the legal realm. We've talked about some obvious ones, traffic signals. What are some that maybe I couldn't come up with as easily?
Well, you know, the entire system of, we create this public-private divide. And we say that certain things are the responsibility of the government. And then we say everything else is in your private realm. And so we put into the family all sorts of obligations for caring for one another. But the family is created and recognized through a lot of legal means. So you've got formal marriage as a law. You've got common law marriage in a lot of jurisdictions. You've got sort of palimony, which are all sets of legal relationships set up to recognize that humans create dependent networks. Even more abstract than that, you've got, marriage is a contract. Palimony is only recognized if you've entered into some sort of informal, at least, contract. But even more abstract, we've got contracts around our property rights. We think of those things as making us autonomous, but they're actually determining and structuring the ways that we're dependent. You buy a house from somebody, and yeah, they give you the deed, but embedded in that deed is a bunch of promises about the quality of the house. And we're dependent on those in order to sort of smooth and grease the acquisition of property. So it's everywhere. It's endemic. I can't imagine a place where it's not.
I imagine that the talk you gave while on the University of Arkansas campus was to people in the legal realm.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask a two-part question. What is the value of people who are law students or lawyers understanding that we're more autonomous than we think? And then what would be the value of most of the people listening to our conversation who are not in the legal profession?
I actually think the value is the same for both audiences. Lawyers need to understand that what we're out there doing is not trying to help people be autonomous, but to help people build up the structures through which they protect themselves and keep themselves safe from the very fact that they're human, and that means that they could be harmed. And this is not like a get your guns, you could be harmed, protect yourself. But, you were at one point were a baby, and we want structures so that we can take care of our babies, and eventually you'll be old. And you want structures so that you can be cared for when you're old. And that's what we're doing with law. And that's the same thing that people out on the street need to know, because it helps us figure out what demands we should be making of the government. Hey, government, I need to be responsive to what it actually means to be a human. What it means to be a human is to be vulnerable to all sorts of things. And I want to be able to respond to that vulnerability. So, how it might be lived looks different if you're a lawyer versus a layperson, but the ultimate claim is the same.
I'm going to be devil's advocate. You know what? I want small government. Yeah, we're going to have stop signs. Yes, I want rules about what they can do in a commercial kitchen. Other than that, stay out of my life.
No such thing as small government. Small government is as big a myth as autonomy. The idea that there is a public-private divide, the idea that the government is staying out of your life is just not true unless you live in anarchy and abolish government, right? Like the idea that you think of the First Amendment, free speech. The government can't regulate what I say, but there's a rule that exists to say the government can't go in that space. That's government. That's big government. And so I think that's a myth as well. You just want the government to behave in one way versus people wanting the government to behave in others. And that's a whole different debate.
How did you get interested in this subject?
So, the interesting story is sitting in the room. I can't remember the date. I used to be able to say the date, which made it really powerful. Sitting in the room when what used to be a thrift and then became a big investment and commercial bank, Washington Mutual, failed. And I looked at the bankers in that room. And this is like a, stereotypical private space. It's banks. It's private money. And they experienced that failure in a way that started me asking, there's something more going on in these banks that are impersonal. These people care about who they are. And it made me start thinking about the human condition. And that led me to this body of research that asked, what happens if we recognize the universal human condition of vulnerability? And what would that mean for law? And so it all started in a big conference room when a couple, 3, 10, 15, I don't remember, billion dollars disappeared with a phone call from the Secretary of the Treasury 10 years ago now.
Mm-hmm. there does seem to be a disconnect. No such thing as small government. No such thing as autonomy. A lot of people, especially in election years, say there is. Is that disconnect problematic for the country?
I think it is problematic because what happens, and what we have really done, is give priority to people who we view as having sort of hidden the way that they're dependent on government is hidden, right? So Warren Buffett is dependent on the government. Warren Buffett can't be an investment banker without the laws that structure private contracts, without the laws that structure banking, without the fact that we have decided that banks and investment institutions regulate themselves. Without that, Warren Buffett can't be who he is. But the way he's dependent on the government is really, really invisible. On the other hand, you know, somebody in Appalachia who needs to get government handouts. You're living in the Ozarks and you rely on publicly subsidized housing. It's really visible. We see it. A check is written to you.
So now it's stigmatized by many.
And we purposely stigmatize it by saying that you're not autonomous. When everybody is frankly dependent on government structures, it's just some of us are visibly dependent and some of us are invisibly dependent.
Think there's any way to at least erase partially that disconnect?
By recognizing that we're all universally constant, we can't stop being vulnerable, and that we're all just trying to figure out how to bounce back when life hits us. And if we understood that, and if we saw the person who has fewer resources as just a person with fewer resources, we'd get a long way. But that is actually a tall order, I realize.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Lua Camille Yule is an associate professor of law at the University of Kansas, and she was a recent guest speaker at the University of Arkansas.